You may be seated. The next matter before the court is Talon Shared versus Robert Haddam et al. The plaintiff and appellant estate is present, represented through counsel Brad Schreiber, who will be arguing, and the defendants are present, represented through counsel Brent Poppin, who will be arguing this morning. Each side will have 15 minutes initial argument, and then Mr. Schreiber, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. With that, you may proceed, Mr. Schreiber.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court. It's a pleasure to be back here again. I want to get into the facts a little bit on this case and lay some groundwork. On August 8, 2016, John Haddam lost his life in a shot fire at the Haddam Ranch. The other gentleman who lost his fire was Troy Haddam. Another employee who was working on the ranch at that time was Jeff Holzhauser. Challen Haddam left behind a son, Zayden O'Connor. Talon Sheard, who is the named plaintiff in this case, is the biological mother of Zayden. At the time of the fire, all three of these individuals were working on a fuel tank that was owned by the Haddam family. They were working in a shop owned by the Haddams. They were on the Haddam farm. They were using Haddam equipment to weld this fuel tank. Jeff Holzhauser is the only survivor of this unfortunate accident, this incident. Now, prior to this fire, one of the Haddam trucks, the one that the fuel tank had been removed from, had been pulled up to this shop that was on the farm. And Jeff Holzhauser, we're relying a lot on primarily on the deposition and also the affidavit that Jeff Holzhauser had submitted in this case for our facts in this particular matter. His statements were that the truck was up there because something needed to be done with it, and it was well known in the family that this particular truck had a leaky fuel tank. Jeff Holzhauser tells us later on that he found out from Troy Haddam that this fuel tank had had a leak the year before and that it had been repaired. Troy Haddam actually showed Joe Holzhauser where the seam on this particular tank was it had before. Troy Haddam was in charge of this welding project for these three individuals. He is the grandson of Robert Haddam, and he is the biological son of Todd Haddam. So what they ended up doing is Troy had instructed Challen Haddam and Jeff Holzhauser to remove this fuel tank from this truck. So prior to removing it, they had cleaned it out, they washed it out, they wanted to get it free of any type of moisture or anything on the inside. And I believe Mr. Holzhauser also indicated that they had to shine the seam that they were going to weld, and I think that's for the purpose of removing any impurities so that the weld will stick when they get ready to weld it. Troy was the welder. Troy was the actual welder. He'd had experience previously welding a fuel tank. In fact, he used the same method that his grandfather Robert had described in his deposition. So what happened next is they removed the fuel tank from the truck and it was brought inside to the shop. And the method that was going to be used, Troy Haddam had described to Jeff Holzhauser as being what he called the textbook method for welding fuel tanks. What they did is Jeff Holzhauser was going to work on the brackets that held the fuel tank into place on the truck. So he was going to work on the bench, but he has asked Troy to describe to him what was going to happen. Troy described to him what this process was. Challen Haddam and Troy Haddam brought a UTV or an ATV over. The purpose of it was they were going to bring this fuel tank in to near the welding area. They hooked up an exhaust hose from the ATV to the fuel tank for the purpose of either suppressing any fumes or drying it out while they welded. So this was going on while they welded, and this was at the direction of Troy. When Troy started welding, Challen's job was basically to hold a piece of cardboard. And what they did is they were located in such a position with the ATV that they lowered the shop door and sat on top of the ATV because they were that close to it. And they were trying to cut down on the amount of wind or anything that was coming into the shop. which they effectively, which they did, with Challen also holding the cardboard. Jeff Holzhauser reports that he hears an explosion, and the inside of the shop is on fire. Without going into much detail after that, the result was that Taylor Haddam lost his life, as did Challen Hedman lose his life. Challen Hedman had been incarcerated for 8 days before he lost his life. Jeff Holzhauser received injuries as well from the fire. He was originally represented in this matter by Tom Maher. He actually filed a claim himself. Excuse me. Now, the complaint that was filed in this matter was filed against the Haddams for wrongful death in a survivor's action related to the death of Challen Hedman. The claims are for strict liability in an unsafe workplace. As is evident, the defendants moved for summary judgment in this matter, and that removed our claims, and that's why we're present before the court at this time.
So, Mr. Schreiber, I want to ask you about your unsafe workplace, which essentially is a negligence claim.
Yes, sir.
I understand the duty that exists. What's your theory as to how either Haddams themselves or Troy breached that duty? What's your basis or specification of negligence, separate and apart from the question of duty?
If I understand, Chief Justice, what Judge Northrup did is she bounced that claim because what she had indicated was it was an open and obvious danger that the party should have known of, is what she had indicated. Our position is...
Right, but what I'm asking about the breach. If Haddams breached their duty under the negligence theory, are you talking about direct negligence against them? What did the Haddams do that was negligent? Or what did Troy do that was negligent?
The Haddams' negligence was failing to properly supervise Troy or get him the proper amount of training that he needed to either not weld this tank or to know how to properly weld it.
But how do we know whether the tank was proper? All we have in the record is Troy says, this is textbook. This is the way you weld a fuel tank. Is there any other evidence in the record that would suggest that was negligent, the way he went about welding the tank?
I don't think there's any evidence that says that, but I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that this was a textbook method of welding the fuel tank. I think what his grandfather had testified to is that he had actually used this same method in the past.
Now, right, which wouldn't that suggest that there's no negligence, it's just something bad happened, or I don't know. I mean, is that the situation, or what is the basis of the fault or the breach on the part of the Haddams or Troy?
I think what the evidence is that either Robert or Todd Haddam had suggested that they didn't want that tank welded. In fact, what they wanted to do was to replace that tank, and I think that goes to their duty in this particular matter, not to weld that tank, but to go ahead and replace it in total, is what they were going to do. And that was their plan. I think that's the suggestion, that this tank should not have been welded. And I think that's their indication from the very beginning that they had instructed these guys to leave the tank alone. And we think the facts in this case are inconsistent with that type of a statement.
So, but if they told them to leave the tank alone, then are we at the point where these three men, with Troy as part of the group, disregarded that admonition? And if they did, how does that impact the unsafe workplace negligence theory that you have?
Basically, that means that they are being disobedient is what it ends up meaning, is that what they're suggesting is these three individuals were being disobedient is what it suggests. The facts that we believe that we get from Jeff Holzhauser indicate this was not the situation at all, that there was a chain of authority for everybody in this particular matter, and that Troy had the authority to direct what was going to go on. So if we back up and we go to what the Chief Justice was asking earlier about the duty in this particular case, the duty was basically to keep a safe workplace. And that wasn't done because there's no evidence that these gentlemen were properly trained in how to weld a what they call a fuel cell or a tank. This was simply a method that Robert indicates he had used in the past, and that this was the method that Troy was going to use at this particular time.
So in this claim, should we look to Troy's negligence here? Because it sounds like maybe the theory is that they told him what they told them to leave the tank alone, but maybe Troy countermanded that order. And so is that the negligence that's at the heart of the unsafe workplace claim?
I believe that's part of it. I mean, I believe that's at least part of it. I want to back up for a second and go to the strict liability claim also. The defendants relied on the fellow servant doctrine in this particular matter, which is if you have co-employees and one's negligent, you're not necessarily liable to the other one. Judge Northrup agreed that there was a question of fact as to what authority Troy had on this farm. She agreed that there was a question of fact. However, her ruling was that there was evidence in the file that they were told to leave the truck alone. What we are arguing is that Jeff Holzhauser basically in great detail said that's not necessarily the truth. He disagrees with that, or at least the facts are inconsistent with that particular statement. Now, Todd Haddam actually testified, I never told them not to weld the tank. He said that there was a very detailed explanation in his deposition that he said, I didn't tell them not to weld the tank. I just said, leave the truck alone, whatever that meant.
That raises a question. I hate to interrupt you, but the truck, when Mr. Holzhauer came in that morning, the truck was sitting in front of the shop. It had been parked in front. Do we have any, is there any facts as to how long that truck had been parked? Was it just pulled up that morning before he got there, or do we know that?
I believe that's in the record, Chief, and I don't recall exactly how long it was, but it wasn't a very long period of time, as I recall. Maybe less than a week it might have been there. It's my best recollection as to the length of time it had been there. But Jeff Holzhauser's testimony, I believe, was that if they have a piece of equipment or something like the truck pulled up in front of the shop, that means there's something to be repaired, is what it means. And so that's when Troy took over and said, we're going to repair this truck, as we've done in the past. So these three gentlemen, Troy took over, he directed what they were going to do, which seems to be inconsistent if you're an obedient employee with being told to leave the truck alone, and if you do have some authority. These gentlemen, Challen and Jeff, followed those directions. They did exactly what Jeff says that they were going to do, and they did. They followed through, and they took the tank off, and they did the repairs, just as if they were instructed to. And just as Jeff said, if Troy's around and either Robert or Todd is around, it's basically known that Taylor is the one who is in charge. So what we are essentially, and I'm going to leave the court with this, there's also a punitive damages claim that the court granted summary judgment in favor of the appellees on. We are going to concede that. After going through the file, looking through the facts, we don't think that there is the evidence of malice in this case, as the court reached that conclusion also. And if there are no additional questions.
Was there a stipulation as to whether or not welding the fuel tank was an abnormally dangerous activity?
There wasn't a stipulation before the motion for summary judgment, but that was not raised as an issue in the motion for summary judgment, so I believe it was conceded maybe just for the purposes of the motion for summary judgment. And so that's why Judge Northrup proceeded to, I guess, basically find or assume that it was an abnormally dangerous activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schreiber. Mr. Poppin, you have 15 minutes for your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court.
Counsel.
Leave the truck alone. That's what defendant Robert Haddam instructed employees Shallon Hedman and Troy Haddam as silage harvest was drawing near in 2016. That's what defendant Todd Haddam instructed Shallon and Troy as the three of them were together in front of the shop a couple of days before the accident. Because that it's undisputed that instruction was given to Shallon and Troy, the state's claims fail. Counsel for the estate admitted before the circuit court at pages 621 and 622 of the record two key points. First, that summary judgment rises and falls on whether the instruction was given. And second, that the estate cannot contradict Robert and Todd's testimony that they gave the instruction to Shallon and Troy. When faced with a motion for summary judgment, the non-moving party must present specific facts showing the existence of a genuine dispute of material fact. Speculation, insinuation, innuendo, conjecture, and unsupported conclusions are insufficient to raise a dispute of material fact. Now, despite counsel's admission that the estate can't contradict the testimony of Robert and Todd that they instructed Shallon and Troy to leave the truck alone, the estate still tries to make the giving of that instruction as to be a dispute of fact. But they're unable to do that. But first they point to their first argument is to claim that Robert and Todd's credibility is an issue. And to do that, they rely on the testimony of Jeff Holhauser to suggest that Robert and Todd must have lied when they testified in their deposition that they told Shallon and Troy to leave the truck alone. The instruction, the violation of which led to the tragic death of their grandson and son, Troy Haddam, and their grandson and son-in-law-to-be, Shallon Hedman. And they rely on the testimony of Jeff Holhauser, but Jeff Holhauser testified at pages 288 and 289 of the record that he never heard that Robert or Todd told anyone to do anything with the fuel tank, and he also conceded that he was not part of any discussion about what was supposed to happen to the truck prior to when he arrived at the farm on the morning of the accident. And it's undisputed that on the morning of the accident when Jeff Holhauser got to the property, none of the defendants were at the premises. None of the defendants were there when the fuel tank was removed from the truck and when they engaged in the welding.
Mr. Poppin, do you have any specific recollection of when, in the record, that truck was pulled in front of the shop? Was it that morning, or do we know?
I don't think we know, but I will point the court to the testimony that I think is in the record. Jeff Holhauser had testified earlier in his deposition. I don't think those pages are before the court in the record, but he had testified differently throughout the deposition. And the reason I say that, when you get to the place in the record where Mr. Jensen is re-examining Mr. Holhauser, he talks with him about the fact that now Mr. Holhauser has said multiple different days that the truck would have been pulled up there.
But that's not in the record.
Just that last snippet, so the original testimony is not in the record, Your Honor. And then I will point out that one of the deposition excerpts that we cited to Ben Reinhardt, who was a 10-year employee, he did testify that he saw Shallon Hedman pull the truck up on the morning of the accident. And so those are the only two places I think that the timing of when the truck was pulled up are in the record. What Jeff Holhauser did testify to is he didn't know, he has no evidence of who drove that truck up there. The last time he saw that truck operated was the year before, and it was by Shallon Hedman. So there's no evidence that the defendants, that either Robert Todd or Chelsea, put the truck up by the shop. Now, going back to, and there's no testimony also that Jeff Holhauser never said that Troy or Shallon ever said to him, either the morning of the accident or ever, that Robert and Todd told them we need to work on this truck. That evidence isn't in the record, and so there's no evidence in this record that Robert or Todd lied when they testified that they instructed Shallon and Troy to leave the truck alone. And the simple assertion of credibility is not legally sufficient to raise a dispute of material fact. Now, as you heard Mr. Schreiber talk about, the next thing the state tries to point to try to raise a dispute of fact on whether that instruction was given is to point to the testimony of Robert Haddam about learning from his father 40-plus years before the accident about a fuel tank welding method that was similar to what was used on the day of the accident. And they take that testimony to speculate or insinuate that Robert must have taught Troy that method. But speculation and insinuation is not permissible. And it's also contrary to the sworn testimony in this record. Robert Haddam testified he was unaware of any fuel tank welding taking place at the farm in over 40 years, at no point during Troy or Shallon's lifetime. Chelsea and Todd testified to the same thing. They were aware of no fuel tank welding at their farm in their lifetimes.
But even if it were otherwise, is there evidence here that, as Chief Justice Jensen pointed out, is there any evidence here that establishes what a reasonable person would do to fix a fuel tank? I mean, I'm guessing you just don't throw all the fuel tanks alone or away when they have a leak. Seems reasonable to think, I don't know, that you could conceivably repair them somehow. So is there anything to suggest or tell us or put into issue whether this was a textbook operation or not? I mean, how do you do this? So even if he did instruct him, do we have anything in the record that we could use to gauge the way Troy did it on this day against a standard of reasonableness?
No, we don't, Your Honor. There was no expert testimony designated that said, here is the proper way that you fix a fuel tank.
Is that a problem?
Excuse me?
Is that a problem for the plaintiffs?
I think that's a problem for the plaintiffs, not a problem for the defendants. I think that's consistent with what the court ruled. Then there's nothing in the record to provide a foundation for holding the defendants strictly liable or for holding them to the negligence in an unsafe workplace claim.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Podman. We don't have a lot of developed law on the issue of on the strict liability issue, and particularly as it relates to inherently dangerous activity. Can an agent be held vicariously liable can a superior be held liable if their agent engages in an unreasonable or inherently dangerous activity similar to a negligence type claim? Is there a respondeat superior claim in that instance?
Your Honor, first, the best I can point you to is the restatement second that we cited that talks about strict liability on those that carry on the activity. And so when you don't carry on the activity, there can't be strict liability. So then getting into the question, when you didn't instruct something to happen, but it happened anyway, can you be liable in some sort of vicarious liability theory? And under the facts of this case, the answer is no. And that's because Troy and Shallon had no authority to work on the truck. When Todd instructed Shallon and...
Well, but there is a... I think somebody cited, might not have been in your brief, might have been in plaintiff's brief, a segment from the restatement that talks about agency liability where the superior knows or has reason to know that they're going to engage in that activity.
And that does make sense, Your Honor. If the principals would know that this activity was going to take place, again, I think that takes us back into agency law. But
that's different than respondeat superior, correct?
Yes. Respondeat superior, as I think I reviewed the cases in South Dakota, has usually been applied where one employee is bringing an action against someone else's employer, not employees of the same employer.
Well, and it's based upon the actual fault or negligence of the agent, not the principal. It's just imputed to the principal.
That's correct, Your Honor. And here, I want to make this clear that the defendants cannot be held liable for any actions of Troy, and it's because of that key instruction that Todd gave to Shallon and Troy while they were all three together in front of the shop a couple days before the accident. That because of that instruction, Troy could not have any reasonable belief that he had authority to work on the truck or to direct anyone else to work on the truck. And the same thing for Shallon, the third person. So there's no ostensible authority as to Shallon because he could have no reasonable belief that he could work on the truck or that Troy could direct him to work on the truck because as the agency principals and authorities we cited in the brief established that when the third person and the agent know that they no longer have authority, even if Troy had any authority over any employees in the first place, when Todd instructed them while they were together to leave the truck alone, not only was that a direct instruction, leave the truck alone, but that terminated any authority that Troy could have thought he had over Shallon or that Shallon thought that Troy might have had over him with regard to the truck. And that's backed up in the Restatement Second of Agency, Section 125, which provides that an apparent authority terminates when a third party has notice of the termination of the agent's authority. And the comment states that there can be no reasonable belief the agent's authorized when the third person knows the principal has revoked authority. And so the estate argues, based on testimony of Jeff Holhauser, that Troy had some sort of apparent authority over some of the employees generally on the farm. But when Todd instructed them while they were together to leave the truck alone, that terminated any authority the estate wants to argue that Troy had and as to that truck.
And if the whole case turns on that, which I understand that's the way it's kind of gone, the estate's at a tremendous disadvantage in terms of trying to offer anything other than circumstantial evidence about this authority issue, because of the untimely deaths that occurred in this case. So is that the way it ends? I mean, they can't use any circumstantial evidence, and that they're relegated only to what folks who survive say about that conversation.
I think a couple of things in response to that, Justice Salter, is first that that those are the facts of the case. And the testimony here is by father and grandfather, and their testimony matches with the rest of the facts of this case, with the testimony of Shallon's fiance that he told her the morning of the accident he wasn't going to use a truck that didn't have air conditioning. And of course, the truck that had the fuel tank did have air conditioning. The one that he was instructed to use did not. So it makes sense. And in this case, this is what Robert and Todd testified to. They're not going to tarnish the reputation of their son, their grandson, their son-in-law-to-be, and grandson-in-law-to-be if it's not true. And so there may be a disadvantage, but all we can go with is the sworn testimony and the facts that we have. And further, Your Honor, there could be circumstantial evidence that could. This isn't in the record, but if Jeff Holhauser, for instance, had testified, well, Todd Haddam said that he instructed those guys to leave the truck alone while they were all in front of the shop a couple days before the accident. But Todd Haddam was on vacation in Cancun for 2 weeks before the accident. There's no way that happened. Then we might have a dispute of fact. It's possible, but so theoretically it's possible, even though we had the untimely death of the two that were part of the conversation. But those facts aren't in this record. And so all we can do is go with the facts that are in the record. And it still comes back to what our case law, what our statutes establish, that in order to raise a dispute of fact, you have to point to evidence in the record.
But we can leave room for inferences from the record. And so let's say in this case, the fact that they're even talking about don't touch the truck, a juror might infer from that they were talking about wanting to weld the tank, and they told him not to touch it. Does that make any difference in terms of the analysis? I mean, why would they say don't touch the truck unless they knew these guys were going to plan to weld the tank?
And in fact, that testimony was directly asked to Todd Haddam. I believe it's in the record before this court. Is he was asked if he had ever heard of them talking about that, and he said no. And the reason he gave the instruction was silage harvest was about to begin. They were very busy. They had many pieces of equipment to get ready. This was the truck that Shallon usually used. They had a different truck that was all ready to go, and they didn't want time wasted on that truck. And so it's not a reasonable inference, Chief Justice Jensen, to infer facts that are contrary to the direct sworn testimony. And that's why we think the record establishes that key fact's undisputed. And to go to, real quick, as my time's ending, Justice Salter's statement, We also win in the circuit court should be confirmed based upon the obviousness of the danger of the welding on a fuel tank and the establishment of assumption of the risk as a matter of law under these facts, this rare case where they've even alleged that this was a welding a fuel tank is an abnormally dangerous activity. So for those reasons, we would respectfully ask that the court would affirm the circuit court's decision to grant summary judgment.
Thank you. Mr. Poppin. Mr. Schreiber, you have a five-minute rebuttal argument.
I want to point out that it would be a very rare circumstance that I would stand in front of any court or anybody and accuse somebody of lying. All we're doing is saying the facts are inconsistent with the testimony that the appellees are relying on, that these gentlemen were told to leave this truck alone. Their acts are contrary to that. So what we have to assume is if they are correct, that these gentlemen were disobedient employees, and the facts just don't indicate that. This would be the only example where they would have been disobedient. Now, the other thing that I think is undisputed in this case is everybody acknowledges this fuel tank had a leak. Everybody acknowledges it. The Haddams acknowledge it had a leak. Jeff Holzhauser said it had a leak. One of the only differences is Jeff Holzhauser said, I saw where this tank had been repaired the year before. And I think it was absolutely the year before. Everybody knows this tank leaks, but nobody said, don't repair or fix that tank. The testimony is, or the position of the appellees is, leave the truck alone. If this is a major concern, if this is dangerous, somebody should have said, do not repair that tank. The testimony is, from, I believe it was from Robert, that he thought Todd was going to order a new tank. When Todd was deposed, Todd said, I never ordered a new tank. He said, I never ordered a new tank. But this truck is where it was at. It was in front of the shop where welding is done. They're in that close proximity to one another. Now, we're just saying the facts that have been laid out by Jeff Holzhauser are inconsistent with the testimony of Robert and Todd Haddam. That's all we're saying in this particular case. I'm not standing up here calling anybody liars. We had two deaths in this case. People have been through a lot.
So there's orders and then there's orders. And maybe the order was, as a matter of spending your time, guys, don't monkey around with this truck. We have other things to do. But that wasn't the same thing as saying don't fix it. So that if the workload slacked off or abated during a slow period, as the record suggests, that was not an admonition to don't fix the tank.
I would agree with
that. That's your argument.
I would agree with that. In fact, okay. Jeff Holzhauser also testified by deposition or in his affidavit, if the bosses weren't around and they didn't give you instructions on what to do, and I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said, is there's always stuff to do on the farm. You know what needs to be done, and then you just did it. You don't stand around. That was Jeff Holzhauser's. Basically, Jeff Holzhauser contradicts almost everything that the defendants, appellees, have to say in this case. He'd been an employee, I think, for at least 10 years off and on with the Haddams and knew how this place was operated. It was family operation, he said, and that's the way it was operated. So, anyway, we are asking you to find that there is a genuine issue of material fact and reverse the trial court on this matter and send it back to the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schreiber. The case is now submitted. That will conclude our arguments for this morning. Thank you.